Welcome to Divergent Paths. I'm your host, Dan Dunford, feeling remarkably good, even though I just spent 3 hours watching my Chicago Cubs lose game two of the National League Championship Series. Yeah, it's no big deal. I'm not stressed at all. Thank you for listening. I'm happy that you're putting this in your earballs. This week, my guest is Righteous Girls, who are awesome. Righteous Girls is made up of Gina Izzo and Erica Dohi. Gina plays flute, Erica plays piano, and they play what iTunes calls contemporary jazz, but if you listen to their music, encompasses so much more than you can put a label like that on. They're both fantastic musicians, and I really enjoyed getting to talk to them. After a few months, you know, they were in finishing up the tour on their first record when I first reached out to them in June, but I was able to get together with them the middle of last month, and we had a fun time talking, and So, I hope you enjoy the interview. We got into some stuff that I haven't been able, haven't thought to talk to some of my other guests about. In addition to what has become my standard of, you know, talking about music and talking about, you know, origins and why people do stuff, but also some more things about publicity and other such things. please enjoy the interview. Jump on over to iTunes and pick up their album Gathering Blue. They released it last year and spent roughly, if I'm thinking correctly, about 8 months touring with that record. It's really great music. Some fun people. I have got two tracks from their album featured on this episode. Before the interview, the very last track of their album, and it's a postlude, so I decided why not put it in front of the interview, because that makes sense. It's called Out of Blue, and I don't know how to pronounce the ellipses before out, but on the tail end of the episode is a track featuring Andy Akiho, the wonderful composer and pianist, in quotes, because he does a lot of stuff, weird stuff with piano. Let's see if I can pronounce this right. It's Kar Akur Inai, and it's just really cool, really ethereal. They're great musicians. I hope you enjoy their tracks. And you can find them on the social medias, on Facebook. It's Righteous Girls Music. And they're on Twitter. And they are on Instagram as well, as individual musicians, not as a group. But they make liberal use of the hashtag Righteous Girls. So hit them up there, buy their album, and enjoy the interview. If you like the interview, hop on over to iTunes and hit subscribe. Leave a review, or on Stitcher if that's what you prefer. Also on Google Play. I don't know if anyone actually listens to podcasts on Google Play, but it's on there if you subscribe to Google Play. And yeah. And if you would like to support the podcast, jump on over to patreon.com/divergentpathspod, and you can contribute $1 a month, $2 a month, you know, whatever you want. Please enjoy my talk with Righteous Girls. Bye.
Well, first, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. I haven't actually taped one of these in like a month because I've been like kind of taking a break. So it's kind of like, oh, I have to get back in the. I took like a 2 week hiatus. I didn't put out anything new, and now I'm like, oh, I have to like get myself back into the. Not rut, but into
the groove.
Yeah, back groove. That's definitely the word I was looking for. Could you guys just move a little bit closer?
Yeah.
So, Gina Izzo, hello. And I'm not sure, you have to like correct me if I'm wrong on your last name. It's Erica Doheny.
Yeah, and it's Izzo, actually, if you're trying to get it.
Oh, man.
You're trying to nail it.
I got this.
Yeah. Most people think it's Izzo.
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, that's what would make sense. Why are you trying to mess with me?
I know.
blame someone. Not me. Not the one who didn't find out beforehand. and you comprise Righteous Girls. One of you plays flute, one of you plays piano. Cool. Yeah. and you do jazz and stuff. Cool. So, like I said, it's going to take a good 5 minutes. So, you know, just why? Just why? No, flute and piano is not a standard... quote-unquote jazz setup. You guys self-identify as jazz. Why do that?
Do we?
Well, ish.
I think
it's like it's hard to now it's 2016. It's hard to categorize music anymore, like what people do, because people are trying to find whatever niche they can, you know, corner whatever niche they can. So, you know, it's everything. There's so much more blur. But when I have seen things that were referencing you, it does usually is like jazz, because I guess that's the easiest label to put on it, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was interesting that they labeled us jazz. I mean, if you know, on iTunes, I think it says jazz, right? Doesn't it?
You know, I'm not actually sure what it says on iTunes, but I can tell you. why is a big question, but when we. At well, least
I'm not talking about music. I just mean existentially. Just why? No.
Yeah. Why are we here? When we released our first album, though, that tended to be the point where writers would categorize us more so either as an improvising duo or a jazz duo. We got an indie pop duo at some point. Mm-hmm. We get classical duo. I mean, we kind of get all of them, and it really depends on the person who is writing about us.
Well, that probably says more about the writer than it does anything else. It's like if you write about indie pop and you enjoy something that's not easily categorizable, well, then it's going to be indie pop, isn't it? You know. So, but I mean, that was a little bit broad. So what? How did you guys like kind of come together and start putting something together? I mean, what are your backgrounds? Like, do you know who are you? No, where do you, where are you? You know, where do you come from? Like musically and life wise.
Well, I'm from Buffalo, New York, but I came to Manhattan in 2005. I studied in the classical orchestral program at Manhattan School of Music. So that's what I was training to do during my undergrad and my master's. And that is where I met Erica.
Were you also in the orchestral program on piano?
I did play the Shostakovich 5 in the orchestra. But no, my background is I'm originally from Japan. And moved to England for high school and moved to New York for undergrad. And yeah, that's where I went to Manhattan School of Music and I met Gina. But I was in a classical program for my undergrad and contemporary program for my master's.
Mm-hmm. So now, you know, conservatory structure is a big issue for like much smarter people than me to argue about. But coming from like more, you know, if you're doing orchestral music, like, did you have inklings within what you were already doing that were like, maybe not this? Or is it just like another part of what you were already doing? When you're talking to someone like about who does something like a little bit different and unusual, it's always like, well, it would be really easy if there was like this one thing, like from when they were nine, and they're like, oh, I want to be a free spirit. And I'm like, that's the moment. Yes, because it's really easy with like people who do, you know, a lot of times people who do art or acting or something. It's like, oh yeah, I had this one moment, you know. So musicians, it can be a little bit more difficult.
Well, for me, it was the city and just the scenes here. You know, like there's just so many cutting edge concerts all the time, and just checking those concerts out were just really strong and really influential on my end. Yeah.
There was a period of time when we were both living in Manhattan and we were going to a lot of different concerts together, like our friends who were performing and artists we didn't know, and we were hanging a lot in the Village and going to places like the Stone or jazz venues, and I think we were very much influenced by what we heard and what we were hearing at the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then also, you know, like, I see that it's changing a little bit nowadays too with, the group music. Classical music is kind of becoming more like for young people again, I think, a little bit. I don't know, you look like you have things to say about it, but...
I just have opinions about group music, that's
all. But I've noticed that, like, well, when I moved here, there weren't too many... Well, like, if I go to a classical concert or something, you know, usually there are old people, right? And then...
And very few of them.
Yeah, right. And then I found this, like, I discovered the scenes of young people hanging out, drinking beer, and then listening to really avant-garde music.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. So, yeah, I thought it was, like, really different than what I'm ever used to, so...
So, I mean... What were, you know, what were your kind of expectations before that? Like, I mean, when you were, you know, say like 12 years old, like practicing, having your parents make you practice because you didn't want to. Like what was kind of your expectation, you know, then as opposed to, you know, later?
I mean, what I knew about both my parents are musicians. My dad is a clarinetist, my mom is a flutist. As well, so I think at the time I was listening to a lot of classical music on records, a lot of flute sonatas and orchestra, and that was kind of if you were to have a goal at the age of 12 as a musician, I'm not sure that I knew what I was doing. I just knew that I liked a certain kind of classical music that I had heard and I wanted to play that. Mm. And then I ended up, as well as Erica, I ended up going to Interlochen Arts Academy when I was 15 years old. And at that point, I thought, oh, I want to be a flute player. And I don't know what that meant at the time. If it meant continuing to play flute sonatas and classical music, then I think that's what my vision of playing music was at that time.
When did you start your, you know, do you have a music background, like, yeah. Family-wise?
Well, my mother teaches piano, so, yeah, I mean, I grew up just teaching at home, and, I guess I didn't really have a goal. I just thought, I'm gonna play the piano.
It's so funny when, when I talk to people who are like, oh, yeah, I didn't know I was going to do anything with music until I was like a senior in high school. I was like, you didn't know until then? What were you doing before then? Were you just... But I started earlier than most people who play trombone. I don't know. That's just me. excuse me. So, how, you know, were you guys in like classes together or, you know, just like hanging out or going to the similar kind of, you know, going to similar kind of things, or were you like best friends forever?
We didn't have a classes together.
We didn't have
classes
together.
We did, like, a
conducting
class together.
We did. And yeah. I think we sat on opposite
what
sides
class?
Of the room.
Conducting.
Conducting oh. class.
Yeah.
We did have a conducting
class. I heard you say
class.
Clown acting, and I was like, what is MSM doing?
Is this... It's to get you over stage fright. No,
so is conducting.
Yeah. No, I think that was the only class we had together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a year above me, so.
Conducting is totally clown acting. Anyway, oh, okay. So, I mean, but it was more of, like, an interest in the same, like...
I mean, we're just partying.
We were just friends, yeah.
I don't know how people make friends. I don't know, this is always weird. It's weird about... Well, anyway, culture is different.
Yeah, we were
smaller.
Introduced by friends of ours.
Yeah,
hanging.
Just hanging, hanging
yeah.
out, getting drunk. Yeah, that's what I'm all, you know, that's what it's all about, right? Seriously though, I had no idea when I moved here how important, like, just mild alcoholism is to being, like, meeting people and being a musician. I don't know how it is with other instruments, but in, like, freelance brass players, like, the Broadway guys, the jazz guys, it's like, man, you have to be able to throw down and, like, be able to pay for it, too. Anyway, unimportant sidebar. So when did you, you know, I know all this stuff is, like, in your bio, whatever. I mean, but, like, how did you guys, like, start, you know, playing together and, like, wanting to just, like, I mean... Yeah, you play with a lot of people when you're in school, and that doesn't mean you want to, like, collaborate with them ever again. A lot of times it's quite the opposite.
Right. I think we went to concert together at Manhattan School. I think it was a vocal recital, friend of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one piece that she sang. It was for voice and piano by Joseph Schwantner. And we were both sitting in the audience. We were like, that's really, really pretty. Like, we should try to play that piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that Joseph Schwantner had arranged that piece for flute and piano already. So we found that, and I think that was maybe the first piece
we ever attempted
to play together.
Yeah.
And it was, like, very... I mean, that, for me at the time, was, like, much more contemporary than stuff I had been playing.
What are you talking about? Telemann is still the second half of the second millennium, so...
I mean, it's funny, because we could have gone to so many concerts and been like, oh, let's play, like, Bach sonatas together, and we didn't...
for days.
And we didn't do that.
Ever?
And no.
Awesome.
And, I mean, at some point, we had played some stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
But initially, the initial reaction was, oh, the piece by Joseph Schwantner, we should play together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it would have been, in our minds, we were maybe going to arrange it for flute and piano, but it was already there. So,
mm-hmm.
That was kind of the first thing, and then we...
And how did that go?
I think it was fine.
I think it was fine. I'm not sure about our time on that, but it was pretty, and... Yeah, and I think we compiled it with some other much more classical. We were like, oh, let's find more rep. And then, of course, the obvious choice is to go to the, like, sonatas or something
mm-hmm.
like that, which maybe we read. I think we read...
Well, yeah, I think soon after
Poulenc?
We we did a concert in Japan.
Oh well... Bloody fucking die.
Yeah.
So that was the first concert we ever did. Really
and so you could, like, you could, first concert, you could just, like, put on your bio, like, international. Like,
we had
ensemble.
A tour in Japan.
International,
multiple concerts
international
in Japan.
Touring ensemble.
Yeah, I think actually that was what we did.
That was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's all about marketing.
It,
like,
was our Japan tour.
Like,
the very first one.
It was so fun. I was putting together a resume, and I was talking to a buddy of mine who's done radio, who plays Radio City, and he was like, yeah, you've played a bunch of shows. It doesn't matter where you played them. Just write down what shows you played. Don't put a year on it. They don't need to know that you were playing it with a kids' theater, you know, troupe. Just let them know that this happened. It doesn't, like, it could have been on your own dime. Maybe you put it on the production yourself. Just put it down.
Yeah, I think
Obviously, well, going to Japan is like a much bigger deal than that, but...
I mean, it was rather amazing because we had never played together before, right? And it was our first concert, and it was packed. The audiences with, like, pretty much zero, you know, marketing on our end at the time because we didn't really have anything to market besides, hey, we're doing a these recitals, mm-hmm. so... But, yeah...
Yeah, so that's when we put the rep together. Like, and initially, I think we just played Copeland
Duo, yeah, stuff like
and
that.
And Joseph Schwartner, and I forgot what else.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah,
I think we played that. I think we did.
Started with that, really.
Yeah. Well, and there's even if you're like more interested, like it's funny what the general public views as contemporary music, and even what musicians view as contemporary music versus. What actually is like real contemporary music. You know, some people will like label things that are from like 1910 as contemporary classical repertoire and like But yeah, so how did you first off, what's with the name?
We get asked that all the time.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously get asked that all the time. I'm sure it's been every single goddamn interview you've ever done. But you know what? I purposely didn't read those interviews because I didn't want to already know everything. Just nothing, mostly. Just your names. That was a joke. I'm sorry.
You want to go?
Yeah, after that, we had a different name that we had started with and was very randomly picked.
For that concert in Japan.
To pick something, so. And we had, they asked us, like, what's your name? And so we picked a name. And then when we came back after that concert, we said, oh, maybe we should do some more stuff, some more playing or something like that.
What was the first name?
It was Nova. Yeah, not so bad,
were
right?
Were you just really big fans of the PBS show Nova?
I don't know where that came from, actually.
Well, I mean, meaning made sense at the time. Like, we're kind of, right? Like, new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it
was new to us.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then during that time, I was working with a composer. I was working as an assistant to composer Victoria Bond on a concert series she runs at Symphony Space. And she is programming all new music, all living composers. And so on one of her concerts, there was this really cool piece for flute and piano that was very percussive and jiven and bluesy and kind of rock-infused kind of rhythms. And so I figured out what that piece was and got the music for it. And it was a piece by Randy Wolf, and it was called Righteous Babe. So we played that, I think, was probably one of our second most contemporary pieces that we were playing at the time.
Mm.
And we played it every time we played, I think, for a while.
Yeah, it kind of became our signature piece in a way for that. At that time.
Yeah, and I think when we were thinking about, oh, should we do this more long term together, what's our plan now?
Yeah.
We were actually like, no, we really need to pick a name,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
at some point. And I think this
right.
vibe, and it still feels like that same vibe is very present with our personalities and
yeah.
then the sound that we hear. So we thought, oh, well, we can call ourselves Righteous Babe, but that is a record label, so we had to come up with something else.
Girls works.
And there's two of us, and we're girls, so.
Yeah, and you know what? Just capitalize the first word, the entire first word. It's great.
Yeah.
It's very artistic. So, actually, I mean, there's a lot of people who will play... get together and perform different things for a while, like for a little bit. Let's say, you know, you're last year of your master's or diploma, or like your first year out of school, like people get together and they do concerts together. And, you know, they do things. It's,
yeah.
you know, what else are we going to do? You know, to keep ourselves from like, you know, going crazy, you know, you want to get together and play if you're not, you know, playing, working a lot music wise. But, no, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, that just, it's two or three concerts and that's it. So, kind of maybe talk through like the process from going from oh hey we've done some concerts together to oh no we're a group now or a group a we're a collaboration now,
right?
You know, were there reasons to not do it that did you think about well, maybe this isn't a great idea for these reasons, or why not just keep doing it?
Ooh, well, I'm not sure if I'm gonna answer this correctly, but I mean, I thought the big step up for us was when we decided to record an album,
mm-hmm.
to get away with just doing concerts every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like a specific goal in our mind, and then we really kind of forced us to solidify our kind of image and sound. So I think that was that really just definitely like gave us a path to focus on for a good 3 years.
I mean, it very well could have just ended up being, oh, we played a couple concerts and maybe we'll do one next year, and then
well, and that happens with a lot of people, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And you know what I think was part of it too, when we were in Japan, all the performances we did there, we videoed. So we had these videos that were nice, mm-hmm. and we were like, well, what do we do with these? You know, I guess...
Hey, guys.
Hey, we did this.
On Facebook. Hey, everybody, we just did something.
Yeah. And so at that time, I think it was iWeb, and I was like, oh, well, why don't we have a website?
On iWeb.
Oh, my God.
It was so long ago.
I didn't... Click to me what it meant.
And so I was like, well, if we have a website with a video, maybe we should get photos. And
yeah.
so
yeah.
we did a photo shoot collaborating with a good friend of ours who was like, oh, I want to work with you guys. This will be fun. I think it was more just like, oh, this is fun,
mm-hmm.
at the time. And then we put it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just do it.
Yeah. Well, at that point, we had a name, we had some videos, and we had a photo. So,
so like, why not? I mean, that's more than what most people have when they start a website for those three things.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's interesting that you had like, because I know plenty of people like, people who have one of the literally 1 billion brass quintets. Like a lot of times they'll be like, oh, we want to start this for extra cash purposes, you know, play weddings and. Like, people will have, like, a website before they even have, like, playing samples. It'll just be like, okay, here's our website, here's who we are, hire us. And then we'll record some stuff in a minute. But you guys already had all that, so it kind of makes it a little bit easier as far as decision-making. Wrong? Yes?
Right.
Okay.
And it's like, well, we have a website now. I mean, I can't imagine, like, if we were to look at what that looked like at the time now... but we had stuff up, and then I think I was like, oh, well, where are we going to do another concert? And I think the first concert we did, I reached out to Cornelia Street?
Possibly.
Cafe?
Yeah.
I don't even remember where that was, but, in some smaller places that were kind of underground, we had, like, 10 friends. Who came to our concerts at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're doing new music and more than 10 people come, you're doing it wrong. It's not artsy.
Yeah.
It's not arty enough. No.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of new music people. I'm obviously being sarcastic. But, yeah, and of course, New York has, like, a lot of great spaces like that, you know, back of a bar, or, you know, like, but places where it's cool to hang out.
Yeah.
And not just, like, oh, I'm going to... Well, I was gonna say like I don't know where I was gonna go with that, but like a slightly larger venue that's harder to fill and you have to sit.
The back room of some bar that has a really terrible piano, like we would play those kinds of places and just have our friends come and hang out and stuff like that.
Well, terrible pianos add character.
They do. They have a vibe.
Was
especially that... ones that don't have pedals.
Oh. What? Okay, what? Yeah. Where was this?
A place that's no longer open.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was a place called Zir Zaman.
Mm.
Yes.
No pedals.
No pedals.
No pedals. Yeah. But we didn't know that until we started playing.
Oh,
I was like, huh, all right, well.
could have been an upright.
I mean, you gotta keep going. Gotta keep going.
Yeah. And yeah. And that's how you make great art.
Yeah. It was very artsy, that concert, for sure.
But, you know, afterwards you can just, like, good try.
But then, after that, on our website, we had a show listing because mm-hmm. we were playing places that, like, Zier Zaman without the pedals on the piano. So.
So what was, you know, when you're kind of a fledgling duo in New York, where there's so many places and so many, it's like a double-edged sword, because there's so many opportunities, or if you put in the work, you can make so many opportunities for yourself. And on the flip side of that, you can, because there's so many places, you can be doing stuff for a while and just be like you're shouting into the void, if you will. But starting, you know, doing this kind of, like, bouncing from place to place, you know, playing for 10 people or 15 people or whatever it is, you know, were you able to use that time to, like, really distill, like, a personalized sound with, because can you do that without, like, you want feedback, but you don't want, like,
right.
expectations necessarily.
Right. I think that at the time we didn't have a sound. We were just playing
yeah.
whatever rep we found that was written for the instruments, or whatever we thought sounded like a cool piece.
Mm.
But I think as a duo at that point, we were getting used to playing with each other. Mm-hmm. And getting used to playing with each other in front of people more so than actually.
Right.
Our sound changed quite a bit. I mean, after we had played some concerts here, I think we discussed, maybe we should record this. And our concept of the album was not really a concept at all, except for we wanted to record something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, there's... Well, I mean, flute and piano, like, every flute album is going to have piano on it, so, like, it can very easily go from, two collaborating musicians to, this is a bunch of pieces for flute with piano.
Right.
You know, or just, like, a kind of a mixed up collection of just, this is what we kind of can do right now, or what we want to do right now without, you know, album curation is not as big of a deal now as it has been in the past with streaming services and everything, but it's still like there's an art to it.
Yeah.
That's all. When did you guys, like, when were those first Nova concerts?
They were 6 years ago?
Yeah.
6 years ago.
Yep.
And so it was, like, how long after that were you like, we're gonna start, like, working towards recording an album? What was 6 years? 2010?
Yeah, that was 2010.
We were playing concerts together for about 2 years.
I remember we started talking about the album, and we, like, actually, we used Kickstarter to mm-hmm. raise the initial fund for the album, and that was 2013.
So, yeah. 3 years ago. But for about a year before that, we were like, oh, we should do recording. And then at that point, that was kind of a turning point, because we really needed to think about who did we want to have on there with us. And I think at that point, we had certain artists in our head at the time who we heard together, and we're like, those are the people that, you know, we want to work with
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you start to shift from just, I mean, obviously working with people is one thing, but how did you start to shift away from more just, like, kind of playing what's there into like a more improvised feel and into developing, like, your own unique voice as an ensemble?
Well, I never studied improvisation at all, really.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, come on, classical music,
but,
never used improvisation at any point in its history.
But I listened to a lot of jazz and a lot of contemporary jazz. So that was kind of the sound that was in my head, but... I'm not even sure how that transition happened.
Well, I mean, usually when you, I would imagine like when it's happening, quote unquote, it's like gradual enough to be like not as, it's not just like one day and you're like, hey, we're gonna do this now.
Right. Well, sound wise for me, I was working with composer Andy Akiho, and he's a steel panist, and he plays with drum set and bass and piano, and I really, really, really wanted to play his music, and none of which at the time had flute in it, not really. And
it costs money to get him to
so
write stuff.
So I went
for
to
you.
A lot of his shows, and then eventually we were like, oh, let's play together. So I took his parts and I arranged a bunch of his music and I played with him, but nobody could hear me because I was competing with the steel pan and the drum set. So there came a point where I was like, oh, well, I'm going to need to get a microphone to play his music with him. So I got a microphone, and then there was a point where I was like, oh, well, maybe I could run this through pedals too. And that was kind of the incorporation of the electronics, which for me was something I started trying to improvise with by myself.
And so
for Erica, I mean, she...
No, I mean, so, I mean, did... Were you kind of, like... Were you, like, going in a similar direction at the same time? Or was she, like, dragging you along? Or... No.
Well, I, like, started improvising on my own just because I felt like I needed to, because mm-hmm. I couldn't play the piano without a music or in memory, or, you know what I mean, like I was just really embarrassed about that, like in undergrad, and so I just started doing it in like a soundproof piano, like soundproof room so nobody hears me, you know. So then I was just working on that, and then I did like independent study with Vijay Iyer.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the, I just studied the improvisation from him for a few months, and that was I mean, I didn't study jazz from him, but I studied improvisation, pure like free improv things. So I mean, I was doing that a little bit, and then I went to Banff for creative music and jazz in about 2013. So that's when I really started like improvising with other people. Outside of, like, before that I was just doing that by myself, but there I just really met all these improvisers. So that was turning point for me. But as a duo, I'm trying to remember.
I mean, it was probably the same time where I was experimenting with improv on my own and she was on her own, and then we're like, oh, maybe we should try this together, and we had really...
I think the one of the first piece we, like, that had improvisation was John Ragonese's piece called Powder. it's like a written piece, but it has an improvisation section in it. I think that's the first piece we did, like, that had improvisation.
And I think, actually, we had played the notated part of his piece, and... we had gotten off, so we opened it up to kind of an improvised section as it was, and we're like, okay, that works too.
Hey, like the best,
open to free improv.
The best art comes out of circumstances that are less than ideal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, does Van Gogh like paint the way he does if he's not like actually, you know, clinically depressed and insane? I don't know. anyway, so you record the album, you know, and I'm sure that was quite an eye-opening experience as far as like the improv, like the difference between performing this stuff live and like recording it, but now, when you released it in 2014, yes? No. Yes?
released it in 2015.
July of 2015.
It took a while. All right, so when did you start? So let me backtrack. When did you start, and when did you, like, start with it?
We launched the Kickstarter in December of
2013.
Yeah. Okay. And then once we received the funding for that, we could better kind of gauge what recording studios we could use, mm-hmm. and things like that, and started locking down dates, mm-hmm. with the composer. It said, okay, well, we got funded, so we're, you know, you can write the piece now. Yeah. And it kind of to come out with album takes a long time, but we kept thinking, oh, well, we got the funding to do the recording, so we budgeted on the smaller end for everything. But then we were like, well, why don't we use an even better recording studio than we thought? Why don't we use, why don't we have, guest artists join us? And why don't, so it kind of opened the door for, like, endless possibilities. But if when you start a project, it can grow and grow and grow as much as you really want to allow it to.
That's why you gotta have a producer for that shit.
Yeah, we did, and we had a producer for this, and we didn't necessarily plan on that, but we're like, okay, now we have a producer, and now, we're using really amazing recording studios. And then we thought, well, why not, do the recordings, see what comes out, and then send it, why don't we get a record label?
Yeah.
And this all takes so much time, and then we got a record label, and then said, why don't we get a publicist? And then we made the pitch for the album to a couple of publicists that were suggested to us, and then, now we're working on the publicist clock. Mm-hmm. We worked with Steven Schwartz at .. Music, who is incredible, but then he had his own timeline, too, for when he could release everything for us, and when the campaign could fit into his schedule. So that also took a while. And then during that time, we applied for a grant at New Music USA to fund a music video to the opening track on the album, and we got funded for that. So then we had to make the music video.
Where did you guys film that? It looks insane. Like, it looks like you're in a fucking penthouse.
Yeah. It's right above Columbus Circle.
Yeah.
It's at the very top of Columbus Circle there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that makes...
In the beautiful space with all glass walls.
Yeah. No, I was just there on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Okay, that...
So...
Now that you say that, like... The images from the video are locking in with the images, because I'm usually there during the day.
Yeah, and actually we recorded that starting when it was daylight to when it shifted to being dark out.
I'm never there at that time of
day. And it was this really beautiful blues background. That was the videographer's choice. We applied for the grant with Michael McQuilkin, who's an amazing videographer, and he said, oh, it's going to look gorgeous at this hour. Mm-hmm. So.
And he was right. So, I mean, okay, this is, now as a person who, and I'm going to swing back around to, like, your music and, the stuff that we're actually here to talk about, but I'm just curious for, on my end, because I reach out to artists a lot, and I do a lot of emailing, and, I'm always kind of, not leery, just like... If I want to reach out to an artist, and I'll go, some artists, it's no big deal. They just kind of do their thing and they do everything themselves. Now, but recently, as like my guests have risen, in at least in social media following in some aspects, I'll go on, I'll be like, oh, I want to talk to these people. I'll go on their Facebook page. I'm like, so, and there's the Facebook, there's the info. Info email, and there's a booking agent, and there's a publicist, right? So I'm not trying to book anyone necessarily, because I don't have any money, and I'm not like so I'm kind of, more and more it's a lot of the artists I'm dealing with, especially younger artists who are more savvy about, they will pay for publicists now, and it usually ends up in me being like, I'll get back to this artist like down the road a lot of times. But from the other side, as young artists, why get a publicist necessarily? That's you know, because a lot of, I'm sure there's plenty of musicians who are doing things that don't have any kind, don't pay for any, like they're just kind of like doing everything on their own. Yeah, they're self-promoting, doing the whole spiel, like and like wearing themselves to the bone, let's say. Like, you know, why? I've never actually asked anyone why they did that. You know, especially, you know, starting out ish. You know, you guys are on your first album. Like, of course you want to do it right. Mm-hmm. But like, what went into making that decision?
I think with the quality of the album that, I guess what we were investing in it financially for the better studios and the artists that we got on there, we ended up consulting with a publicist who I follow a lot of his artists. He's an amazing jazz publicist named Matt Merowitz. And we met with Matt, and he kind of went through all the different parts of the album with us. For everything from the photos we were using to our name to the music that was on there. And he suggested a couple. He said, well, you know, you have this, you know, quality album. If you really want to reach, you know, certain areas of media, then I'm going to suggest that you contact, you know, these people. These are the people that fall into, like, your type of music publicity categories, and you know,
especially like our music was kind of hard to categorize.
We were working with jazz, you know, composers and artists and improvisers, and also, you know, the contemporary classical composers. So we didn't really know what kind of publicist to get. We're not going to get the classical string quartet publicist, and we're not going to get the jazz publicist, so mm-hmm. where do we fall? And so we had questions like that. I guess Steven was suggested to us, and he works with amazing groups, and we thought, oh, maybe he won't respond to us, but we emailed him, and he was great at responding right away, and he was very interested with the artist that we were working with, so we signed on with him. But it's still a lot of your own self-publicity.
Yeah. I mean,
it's probably 50-50, to be honest. He does everything he can.
And he has access to avenues that you wouldn't necessarily have. But, like, he's not gonna do, like, I would imagine that he's not gonna do, like, the, like, lower-level grunt publicity that you would do yourself anyway.
Right. No, we do that. I mean, the social media stuff, that's all of that kind of publicity is us. The mm-hmm. label dealt with the publicity for the sales and stuff like that, and they, you know, but he really was able to reach the writers mm-hmm. that we would not have been able to reach on our own.
Yeah. Yeah. As a result, we have a couple of reviews.
Right. Yeah. So that's one thing. That's okay. So you do all this work, and you, when you finish recording, did you have like? Was there a lot of, did you have self-doubt about, like, do I want this, like, were you happy with what you ended up, I mean, I don't mean, like, happy, like, oh, man, I'm really annoyed that I'm putting this out, but, like, was that, like, an internal struggle with, you know, because this is your first time, and it's, like, your first, like, oh.
It was our introduction
Hey, people, this is who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was there a lot of that?
You mean after the initial recording process?
I mean, while you're, like, in the process of like, getting it ready.
I feel like over, really, all the way through the release of it, everything continued evolving. Mm-hmm. I mean, even, we went into the studio, we recorded, and even the music was still, we were working on the music and post-editing, like, far after the initial process. So it was kind of an ongoing conversation the entire time. Nothing, you know, we didn't even have a title for it when we went into the studio to record. And that, came from even, you know, the whole process itself as mm-hmm. it developed. But,
Yeah, the release, we That's when we sort of put improvised interludes in between the pieces.
Right.
And
that was like an afterthought that was never part of the...
Yeah, that was never part of
the... And we actually didn't record those in a recording studio. We recorded them in my apartment with a really nice microphone.
Of course. On a Zoom.
But I mean, they were some of the parts of the interlude were pulled from the sessions. They might have been like outtakes or different parts of pieces, but then we layered them afterwards and like continued recording all the way until we got it mastered
to tie everything together.
Those improvised interludes in particular, like it makes for a very satisfying format. There's other artists who have done similar things on like different, whether it's concerts or albums, and I personally, I'm always like a big fan of the, you know, because it makes it a little bit more continuous in some ways. It's not like peace, 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 peace. It's like peace, ooh, peace. Ooh,
yeah.
I don't know why I just made that noise, but anyway. So the album comes out. You finish. You're done. I'm sure it was great and everything. So a lot of artists, their first album is self-produced, self-recorded. You know, not self-recorded, but they'll drop the money for a recording studio. Your situation was a little different. You know, you did the work, did it a little bit differently. And as we already talked about, your publicist was able to put you in touch with reviewers and so when you're used to, I don't know, when I was a student at Manus, you know, you get the New York Times will come to like the opera and they'll be like, they're students.
Right.
So-and-so was really good and the orchestra sounded fine, you know, and that kind of a thing. Like that's, you like most, and occasionally maybe, you know, if you're connected enough, you know, have an in or able to pull in things, or you're playing at the right place at the right time, you might be able to grab, you know, someone might come in and review a recital. Most classical ensembles, their first album is just kind of like, I don't know. A lot of times it's that first album is kind of like the testing ground.
Right.
A lot of times. Now, for you guys, it was a little bit, you know, it was a little different. Like, your first album, you were able to procure a label. You were able to get it reviewed in a slightly different way than someone just coming to a concert that you're playing in. That was a really long-winded way of getting around to what I was... And it was very well reviewed,
right.
Which, you know, of course has to feel good because of all the work. Did you feel like, you know, I don't know, did you feel gratified like that? You know, I don't know, it's hard to say because reviews are great and everything, and they can help, but at the end of the day, like when it gets published, people read it, and then it's over. But I have like a nebulous concept that I'm shooting for, and I'm having a hard time like grabbing in my hands. Did you feel gratified after all of the work you put in? I mean, I don't know what you were expecting.
I'm not sure we really knew what to expect actually the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't. We actually had a conversation that said, well, there's, you know, there's a big chance that someone's not going to like what we're doing. And we just really had no, because we had never done it before, we had no idea what to expect and how people would react and how, we didn't even know if anyone would review it at that time, even though we had a publicist signed on.
Right.
We
there's
said,
no,
there's
that's
a chance
not a guarantee.
That nobody listens to it. Who knows? I mean, it was definitely, you know, our first time going through with that. So I think we were just very open about any possibility that could be there.
I mean, in some ways, like, after all of the work you put in, like, and if you're proud with the product, anything that comes after that is kind of just is gravy a little bit.
I mean, I think initially, even with the composers and the artists that we had signed on, it was, I mean, maybe this is too confident, but I never felt that there was like a doubt that the music quality wouldn't be what we wanted it to be initially. So
So, well, yeah, I mean, if you're like after a certain point, like if you're really satisfied with the level of your playing and, you know, you put in all the work, like what people think about it is going to come down to their personal taste.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
Like music reviewing is such a funny such a funny thing.
Yeah.
I mostly
it's hard to know what to expect.
Especially like classical and jazz album or just concert reviews, I'm just kind of like, okay. In some ways, like when I read them in the, like if I'm like scrolling through the Times or whatever, I'm just like, okay, cool. Like I'm not, who are you? Like, I mean, obviously they have like mad credentials and all this stuff, and like, but I'm just kind of like, what? Why are you saying that? That's mean. So okay, after you know you after you've kind of finished like the cycle, you release it in 2015, and you know you finish like just I don't want to say you're done, but like you kind of. There's always the cycle. I mean, were you touring around with it, I'm assuming?
The past year. I mean, directly following the CD release, which took place in August at Joe's Pub. I mean, that's a whole thing in itself, too, getting booked at venues for CD releases and making all of that happen. But we lined up a tour directly following that. And then over that year, we would get offers to play, and we would bring the album music to those places.
Yeah, well, the tour really took a year. Mm-hmm. We still, this year in June, we went to Japan and played the program.
Right, so for initially the funding for the album, we had a large support from Japan, and so over the year, I mean, over the 3 years, they really, like, were following the project. And then over this past year, we just had to find a time where we could get out there and, you know, play at a venue that we wanted to play at. And so, yeah, this June, we finally made it out there, and we played, and we were still playing the album stuff because that's what they wanted to hear. They were waiting for it. So
it's like you're welcome to the jungle.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Joe's Pub, that's like the perfect acoustic venue for like.
It was a great place for us to play.
Your particular setup, it worked. That space works really well for those kind of like intimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was the two of us, and then we had the guest artists in trio form, mm-hmm. and so it was a good size stage, and yeah. So.
The only time I've played there has been with this like hip hop group, and that's not a great. That's a terrible venue for that kind of music. It's
for us, it was great. They could drink any dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
And
they can sit down. It's like great. Yeah. It's like dinner,
right.
Dinner theater, but it's music.
Yeah.
Like it's not great if you need people to stand up and
right.
do shit. I'm like,
yeah. Right.
Anyway, so when you obviously, I mean, I know like even like, well, I guess that's where you were when I initially got in contact with you. You were in Japan.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. Actually, we were both gone for the summer. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
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 So, you know, as you kind of like wind down on, you know, it's been just over a year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are your kind of your thoughts on the whole, at this point, what, a 2.5 year process, basically? You know, it's been almost three, like from what you said, it's been almost 3 years since you started that initial Kickstarter campaign, mm-hmm. in like 2013. So like after this time, you know, what are your kind of your like reflections on the arc of the project, so to speak?
Well, I mean, it was a learning experience for both of us. So I mean, we were, you know, still experimenting a lot of things. So like we were discussing, okay, who's gonna do what, and then we weren't like really not sure who's doing what, and then, you know, that kind of stuff can get kind of hard. But I mean, I think it was a really good, great learning experience, and
it was a lot of trial and error.
Exactly.
Like, is this gonna work? Is this the best way to do this?
Yeah.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Sometimes absolutely not. I don't know. I always like talking to people about, I don't, not when, like, how people, like, I don't know, when artists have something that just doesn't work, I would, that's always interesting to me. But what was I saying? Reflecting, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so when does, you know, now that you, when does the clock start ticking on more material that you have to release?
It's ticking.
How soon did you start like thinking about the next album, the next project, the next programming?
We've been discussing already.
Like, I mean, we've been discussing it. Yeah, I think before the last album was released, sure. We were already thinking.
Well, if it's already recorded, why not just like start thinking that down the road?
We started thinking about, oh, you know, what's the next thing looking like, and when is that, and you know. To go on the album route is a very long journey, so it's one of those things where for us, starting to record the next album before the other one was even released was not something we needed to kind of...
Yeah, we needed time to digest.
What, you know, what that was, and also
to continue developing our sound further
mm-hmm. Than where it was at even... 6 months ago, I think. So it's constantly changing.
Well, and it's so. one of my I bring this up a lot when I talk to people, but one of my favorite he was a music critic for Spin magazine for a long time, and then was a TV critic. But he always brings about when you're talking about a group putting out their first album, you know, they have like the entirety of their previous life experience, and like they don't, there's no clock on it. Like you can take your time to craft exactly what you want and to distill like all of your life experience and like all of your musical ideas and all of whatever that is into one thing, you know, into that very first hello to the world. But after that, like, you know, you guys had, you know, math, like 27 years to do that. Yeah. 25, 26, 27 years to do that. And then as soon as this comes out, like, you have to do it again, but you have to do it in the fraction of the time to keep things fresh. That's not to be like, well, how are you going to do it? But I don't know. It's interesting to me because do you kind of, obviously your sound's evolving, but do you kind of stick with, you know, dance with the girl that brought you? Or do you kind of like try, you know, just, do you want it to sound like the first thing? Do you want it to sound like completely different? Or do you want it to be half and half? Like, it's, there's so many different directions you can go. And obviously there's, you know, you're kind of in the earlier stages of that, I would imagine. But like, what, I mean, if you can even say like what's kind of like the thought process is there?
I would say... I would never go as far to say we're going to try to make it sound like something else. I think, like, we're not going to try to make it sound like something that we're not, I guess. If that makes sense.
I mean, yeah.
So we, I mean, I don't know. I think that's part of what we discuss a lot is what are the sounds, like, what are we hearing now and what are we doing now and what are we incorporating and... Is that the direction for the next thing?
I don't know, because I just, like, the way you guys talk about your music and the way you guys sound, there's much more in relation to, like we said earlier, like an indie pop group or kind of like an indie band. Like, there's much more, what you guys do is far closer in relation to that concept-wise than it is to someone, say, like the Emerson String Quartet, who's recording the standards, you know, has 30 albums of like all of the standard string quartets, you know what I mean?
Right. I would definitely say that's more a direction. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, even this past year, we've incorporated a lot more improvisation and electronics and our own material into what we're doing. So
now that you guys both work on the side in addition to, like, this isn't the only thing you do, which I imagine can be difficult.
There's lots of stuff going on all the time.
Yeah. Do you guys use Slack?
Yeah, we do now. Indeed we do.
I wish I like worked in a space where I needed to use it, but when I would just be like sending messages to myself because it seems so cool.
Oh, we have a cohort that is using Slack as, as a collective nowadays.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah.
Now, so difficult to balance? Like, are you guys
everything
just, like,
all together?
Are you guys like just in like emailing back and forth like all like constantly basically? Mm-hmm.
I mean, definitely when the album was being released, a lot, a lot of emails. Yes. Yeah.
But you know, do you find it difficult to like form like coherent musical ideas and directions while
via email?
Via email, or just like while like supporting yourself? Because I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't want to like project. When I was working like mostly full time, it was really hard to just get myself up to do anything. I was just looking at it like cartoon. And it was like one panel. It's like this person's like, oh, I'm gonna get so much work done after, you know, so much done after work today, and then the next panel's like, I am one with the blanket and the blanket is one with me, you know, that kind of a deal, like after you get home. You know, has I mean, I would imagine that balancing that has been a developing process as well.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so what are you guys like chilling for a bit?
I think we're about to pick up the pace.
I mean,
actually,
it is September.
Yes.
You can't,
so
you can't be slacking off.
No, we will not be slacking off. But I think soon, within the next couple months, we'll be going for round two. So
back in the studio, just never ends.
Yes.
It just never ends.
Yeah. So very soon.
it's just like, didn't we just finish
the I know.
But I mean, it's nice that you're able to do that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I know a lot of people who put out an album and then they're like, well, it's gonna take me another 4 years to do this again.
Well, again, it feels better that it's the second time we know what we're going to do.
Yeah, and you have roughly a better idea, like, oh, this is how much it's going to cost. Yeah. This is, like, how much we're going to hate each other at this point. So, do you guys have any, like performances coming up? Or, you know...
We are playing at Shapeshifter Lab in October 20th. That's the next New York concert. We're in Connecticut.
Yeah, curated by Sirius String Quartet.
Yeah, Sirius String Quartet invited us to play on a bill with another string quartet on that evening, Seven Sons. So we will be there. Yeah.
Cool. Shapeshifter is nice.
Yeah, it's a nice venue.
And as far as social media stuff goes, I would imagine that you're on Instagram and Twitter.
We are on Facebook. We are on... We are on Twitter, and then we have our own Instagrams.
Oh.
Yeah.
So.
No Righteous Girls Instagram?
No, we don't, right?
What?
I know.
No
Righteous... We do hashtag Righteous Girls, though.
No Righteous Girls Snapchat?
Oh, we're on Snapchat.
I have not anymore.
Snapchat is... I don't understand.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be our generation. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Ask the 13-year-olds.
Yep. I learned the other day that if you want to learn anything about social media, you ask someone who's around the age of 13. Because they are amazing at it.
But that's also when like people are like the worst people they're ever going to be. I was a horrible person when I was 13, you know? Anyway, and it's righteousgirls.com, Facebook. .com/righteousgirls
Righteous Girls Music.
Music.
Yes.
On Twitter. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Great.